Mentally Morbid.
This podcast represents the opinions of the speakers and guests to the show. By listening to this podcast or reading any content posted or shared by the Mentally Morbid creators, you agree not to use this podcast or blog as psychological advice. The content should not be used in lieu of medical or psychological advice or any legal capacity whatsoever, including but not limited to establishing standard of care. The content here is for entertainment and educational purposes only. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements or opinions made on the podcast or blog. Please consult healthcare professionals for any medical or psychological care.
Don't want to be an American idiot. Da-na-na.
Welcome back, everybody.
Something.
I feel like I should have expected it, but yet I wasn't. Hi, welcome back to episode 52. This is Annie.
My name is Kinsey.
And I'm Kayla. Every time I try to introduce myself, she always says it at the same time as me, so I let her have her space.
I love listening to the episode, and every single time Kayla's like, okay.
See, from my perspective, I wait, and I'm like, Kayla's going to say something, and then she does it, and I'm like, oh, now there's an awkward pause. I guess I'll say something. From my perspective, I'm like, why the fuck did you not say something?
Because I know you're going to interrupt me.
You know, honestly, this feels like a good couples therapy session where the wife is saying you don't ever talk and the husband says you never let me talk.
Right.
Am I the husband?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That tracks.
In a certain way, yeah.
Welcome back.
How are you doing?
Bad.
How am I doing?
How's everybody?
Bad. My feet and my hips hurt.
Jesus Christ. I have so much more pacing to do tonight.
Listeners, for those who don't remember or who weren't listening last week or just didn't listen, for you, first of all, but also we're in week two of our walking challenge, something that we signed up for with no real sense of a reward except for extra steps.
And a possible prize. One possible ambiguous prize we know nothing about.
And we are so competitive that we can't quit until they tell us that it's impossible to win.
We are in
first place. We're waiting for that moment.
We are tied for first.
Fortunately, we are in first place.
We are not only in first place, we are first on the sheet of first place. So,
unfortunately, we can't quit yet because we still have the possibility of winning nothing.
Four teams already have no points. Let's see what else. I feel like we have. Oh, we have. There's at least 1, 2, 3. There's at least 14 teams that have no chance of winning at this point. So,
oh, if we were one of those 14, I would say quit. We're done.
Half of the teams don't even have double digit points. So I think
the moment we are like 5 points below another team, I'm out.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think that's going to happen either because we are determined.
Listeners, I spent an hour. First of all, right now I'm watching my best friend's dog. Shout out Ashley and Doki Boy. She does listen to our episodes. She does. I didn't tell her this, but I spent an hour jogging in place around her. Well, not in place because I have no balance, but jogging in circles in her bedroom last night while the dogs watched me because I did not have enough steps.
I walked 5,500 steps in my bedroom the other night because not only did I have 4 loads of laundry to finish folding and putting away, but I still only had 4,500 steps. And I was like, I can't separate these time. I have to multitask. It's either I do the laundry or I get my steps. And I need both of those things to happen. So I just walked around a lot while I was folding clothes.
I truly can't wrap my head around it, listeners. Okay, first of all, like, we're all active people. We all go to the gym regularly. So in my mind, I was like, I might have to do an extra 30 minutes of exercise a day, right? Not that big a deal. I went for a 1 hour walk today. I walked 2 miles and I'm still not done with my steps. 2 fucking miles. My dog is collapsed on the floor when we get home. Like,
Copper. He's going to have hip problems by the end of this.
Copper said, I did not sign up for this. And he's right here, actually. He just looked at me. Let me tell you, first and foremost, he is now signed up for it because I went on a walk without him the other day because he was at daycare. And it was a much different experience. But so first and foremost, my first point is I walked for an hour today and I still have 1,000 steps left to get after my workday. And that second off, it's a lot different walking as a single woman with or without a 100-pound dog. Because when I walk with Copper, a guy today, I sent them a video, the girls a video, literally looked at me and crossed the street so he did not have to approach Copper. When I walk by myself, man, approach me. And I'm like, please don't speak to me ever. So I realized that Copper will be on every walk now moving forward forever. Even if I have to go get him at daycare and make him go on a walk with me.
Yeah. So the reason why we're doing this is because as therapists, like, we are notorious for sitting in chairs all day because that
is what we do.
That's our shtick. But turns out it's killing us slowly.
But it's not the walk. Okay, I'm speaking for Kinsey, and I feel like I'm fairly here. It's not the walk that's killing me. It's the extra devoted time to intentionally walking. I do cardio. Sometimes my cardio, though, is on two wheels. So the days that I have to go for a bike ride, and then additionally to my 5 to 10 mile bike ride, do 10,000 steps. It was just something ridiculous about that. Now, he did say, though, if there's an app that can show the equivalent, but I'm going to be honest, I don't trust that, and I want my 10,000. I will not be the weak link.
I think that's where I'm at is I get to the gym now 30 minutes early and walk, work out for an hour in my gym class. My HIIT class, my cardio and weightlifting class. And then I walk for another 30 minutes. And I'm just not that kind of worker outer. You know, I'm not that
big. I cannot find the time to do both. So I have quit going to the gym this month for this freaking challenge.
I'm taking away the gym.
It's just so funny.
I haven't been to the gym all month. Because I don't have time.
Literally, listeners, this email we got today said, I must say, my favorite feedback that I've gotten from so many of you already has been something to the effect of, even though I didn't hit 10K every day, or even any days, my steps increased a bunch, and this is the sticker, and I'm having fun. And the three of us are on this bus. I feel like I have had zero fun. I've had zero fun, okay, except for when I saw that we were first.
I have made it until 11:30, multiple nights, where I still need 3,000 steps. So I'm outside at 11 p.m. with my friends, Erica, shout out. And I'm just like pacing back and forth, back and forth. I'm going, walking around the block. I'm talking to people on the phone at 11:30 at night because I'm like, hey, you up? I got to go get some steps in. And I need to make sure that I'm not going to die.
Literally Saturday night. Kayla, you went to the concert on Saturday, right? Saturday, Kayla goes to a concert and I go to like
It was Friday.
Friday, she goes to a concert and I went to like a school get-together thing. Because first Friday, that's what it was. And so as we're getting ready to leave, and Gus, my boyfriend, is like, how many more steps do you need? And I'm like, you don't want to know the answer to that. Like 5,000. So Gus and I just start walking down the street, basically. I walked around a store for a little bit. I wasn't getting very far. So I was like, let's just start walking home. It's a couple minutes in an Uber. We'll walk part of the way, see how far we get with steps, right? So we're walking down the street. As this is happening, and I'm walking down a fucking dark street with cars on it, Kayla says, oh, I'm not done with my steps, and sends a picture of her also walking in the fucking dark in the middle of the night. Both of us
put our lives at risk. It wasn't just walking. It was like brisk speed walking.
I literally walked 2 miles back to my house instead of taking an Uber, and I was drenched in sweat when I got home, but I finished my fucking steps. And it was not safe. It was in no capacity safe. The whole time, we're just like, once I finish my steps, we'll make it. My watch is at 1%. I'm like, oh, it's fine.
Needless to say, this is going really well.
So this whole...
go ahead.
The whole we're having fun thing. I was missing that part of the email. I don't know what's happening there, but I missed that. I missed the fun part. I want to win, though.
It's not the competition.
I think it's us.
It's us.
There's nothing that we do that we don't go all in. I think this for myself. I'm either competitive where I am smack talking. I'm going to like kick you in the dust. I'm going to let you know that I won at the end. I'm especially this way with men. I'm horribly competitive with men. Ask Kevin if like he'll try and beat me to the door sometimes. I literally pushed him into the sidewalk so that he couldn't open my door the other day because we raced. Horribly competitive with men. Or I could care less if I lose or win. And I hope you win. Good for you, because it is either all or nothing. And that's where I'm at. We're either going to win or I'm completely out of it and I will never check my steps again.
I think we're going
to win. I think we're going to win as well. I think it's helping mentally.
I think we're going to tie and then we're going to lose to a tiebreaker.
I literally can't imagine that all five of these teams are going to get perfect scores all 4 weeks.
Kinsey, there are other people who are going to do this anyways, not because of a competition. I guarantee you at least one of those groups has like people who don't have clients all day or work in a hospital. Like, you got to think, therapists don't sit down.
I just need 1 week link, Annie. 1 week link per week, and then we're down that's to three.
Do you sabotage?
I spend so much time watching Survivor. I need one person to get just a sniffle, not sick, but a little sniffle, a headache.
Can you imagine if one of us gets sick? I work with children. What if I get COVID?
Then you're going to have to walk.
Someone who went on vacation. You know, I just need like one destruction, one little thing.
Kinsey, I don't want your bad juju on our team. Like, I feel like
this
you're
is a really good
sick.
Time for you to start practicing witchcraft, Kins.
I'm ready.
Go get your crystals, please. Sage.
I'm just yourself.
I don't know.
There's
five teams tied for first. That's 15 people. Someone is going to fucking break. Someone's going to break. It's not going to fucking be us.
Yeah. No, going back to when we said we don't do anything half-assed, it's been over a year that we've started this podcast, and we are still not sponsored.
We have made $1, if that. Have we?
I don't think we've made $1.
If we did make a dollar, we probably lost it in bank fees 10 times.
I don't think we've made any dollars.
No. But here we are, every Tuesday, And listeners, please be aware, like, you should send us money because I post on social media every day. Annie and Kayla edit in the background when you're not around. Like, we're fucking killing it on this podcast. Kayla's brother.
I don't even care if you give us money. Just share. We need more listeners. Share us.
But hey, guess what?
I'm happy with you just being here, listener.
Shut up. God, you're so annoying.
Our lobotomies TikTok is still growing viral. So.
It's really doing a lot. Hey,
we got like 30 people check us out this weekend just from that. And I posted that like 3 months ago. Fuck our new content. That got 10 views. But the old stuff.
You know, I used to think that when I went out and people were checking me out, that it was because they liked me. But I'm pretty sure it's just because I'm 6 foot tall. And I'm kind of wondering if it's not the same thing for our podcast when they're checking us out. That it's not necessarily because we're attractive, but because of like. There's something wreck? Unique about us.
It's not that we're attractive, it's that we're a train wreck.
Sure.
I know.
If that's the comparison you want to go with.
You know,
that's got to be it.
I watch a lot of things because they're train wrecks, so I'm okay with it.
God. We can't go there.
That's Annie's whole personality. That's your whole friendship together with Kinsey. Watching a train wreck.
It's true.
Got him.
It's true.
Got your ass.
Yes. One day she was like, that girl, she does not have it together. Let's see what happens. And here we are. All these years later.
Oh, guys. Speaking of all our 10,000 steps and the multiple workouts that we're doing, guess how many times I ate cake over the weekend?
Oh, 17.
It was Annie's birthday. We haven't
said that yet.
Cake.
Woo! 47!
Happy birthday.
I had cake four times. Did you guys watch where my family was saying happy birthday?
To you.
Happy birthday, dear Samantha. Happy birthday to you.
Okay.
doesn't work. Okay. It's good to know. Did you guys watch where my family sang happy birthday? Because there's a very
amazing
part. I'm scared to. I thought about it, but I'm kind of scared to.
So, listeners, I told them that they need to, if they want to understand my childhood, then go, because my mother is an avid Facebook poster.
Oh,
she, yeah. She's so good at it. Recorded where everybody sang happy birthday. And of course, I'm sitting there horribly uncomfortable because I'm an introvert who really doesn't love to be the center of attention. I like to be on the outside of the attention, and occasionally I'll peek in. So I'm horribly uncomfortable already. But anyways, at the end of it, we're blowing out the candles. My brother blows some out and goes, "Ha, now you're not going to get your wish." The epitome of my childhood.
You guys are 30 something.
Yes, he's
over 30 something.
We need to work. No, tell them about the Kevin part. That was great. I really liked that story. Tell them about Kevin before the party.
Oh yeah.
I don't know that I can. I don't know that I can.
Who's gonna listen?
That's fair. People might listen.
My parents.
That's fair.
My parents.
Do your parents listen?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, hey everybody.
Hey,
Brenda.
Yeah, so that was cool. Annie's older. Hey, what kind of cakes did you have?
Chocolate. Okay, so
the first cake I had was a chocolate cake with a nice buttercream. It was actually a cake in a jar. The next cake, I told Kevin, I was like, listen, I don't know what you have planned, but I will be going to my favorite cake shop, which made our wedding cake, because I want their strawberry and champagne cake. And I was like, we can just go that day. I'm not asking you to order it because, like, I want it.
Wedding cake.
Yeah, we decorated it. Remember, Kayla? Kayla doesn't remember the cake we fucking decorated. I didn't eat any cake.
It was really good, right?
I was too drunk at that point. I could not hold cake down, but you know, we decorated it.
I don't think I tried the cake. I know that we decorated it.
It's so good. But let me explain something to you. You're never going to try it now because they're freaking closed down.
No!
Yes. So they were closed, but that's okay.
I have a lot of emotions.
That's okay. Because I also had cake pops from the fair. So I just ate an Oreo cake pop.
Like and the Georgia the National day, Fair? Did you go to Perry?
No. The Shady Gay Fair.
Gay. I do like the Georgia National
Fair. Gay Fair. Oh, the Gay Fair.
It's a huge festival. And it's like, it's all like, it's a big yard sale, basically. But people also like do like all their arts and crafts. It's really fun to walk through. So they have all kind of food there. So I got that. And then I also, my parents then threw me a surprise birthday party. And I had cake there. That was a nice chocolate cake with a nice crispy buttercream. You know what I'm talking about? Crispy icing. I love me some crispy sheet cake icing, like from Publix. Kinsey, it's crispy.
You bite it and it crisps.
I don't know if I know.
Like you can drag a fork over the top of it and it doesn't like.
And it's crispy.
Okay, yeah, it's set.
It's
got
like
it. It's yeah. So
you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's set.
Not like sheets.
I understand.
Yes.
Okay, but so, yeah, here's a good question of the day. What is the best cake flavor, and what does that say about my personality? You told me about
strawberries. No, we're not doing that today.
Tell me about strawberries. What is the best cake flavor?
Doesn't matter. You're not on the list. Whatever your favorite is, it's not on the list.
I feel like my favorite would be like a cheesecake, but Annie said that doesn't count.
People give me shit for liking red velvet cake because apparently it's just chocolate cake with red food coloring. But...
And chocolate chips, which is real good.
I really like red velvet cake with the cream cheese icing. That's my favorite. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. That's cake. That's a good one. But I feel like that one gets like overly sweet very easily. Like you can easily have too much and you feel sick.
I can't eat a lot of cake anyway.
This is true.
Like I eat like a bite and a half of cake and then I let DJ have the rest of it.
That I did do that a lot. I would keep putting it down. I think for me, it's about the cake part being moist.
But you love Publix cake, and whenever I get Publix cake, it's not moist.
Do you get big cake or do you get little cake?
I get little cake.
That's why. The little cake. Listen, I learned this from the cake person that did my
Annie
wedding.
Annie is the cake queen. Let her explain the cakes.
The more surface area that has contact with it, the drier it gets. That's why cupcakes are a lot of times drier than actual cake. Then they also put the syrup in there, but there's more surface area to the air.
So you don't like, care what flavor cake as long as it's moist.
It's like when garlic bread goes bad.
Yeah. That's what I've gathered.
It's like when you cut garlic bread and you're like, it's a little stale.
Yeah.
It's because of the surface.
See, that's the thing. Y'all want to give me hell about the cake, but y'all some bitches for some bread.
I love garlic bread.
I've seen Kayla eat bread to the point where she almost throws up. Yep.
I can eat some fucking bread, man.
So small to be eating 4 pieces of toast.
I saw a girl on TikTok get a tattoo of garlic bread, and I am slightly inspired.
But what's the best kind of bread?
Oh, I like a... what's the one that's swirled together? I like the 2-1. Marbled?
You like the marbled bread?
Marbled.
I like... Okay, honestly, this is niche. The Cheesecake Factory brown bread? That shit is...
Rye?
It might be rye.
It is rye, but only Cheesecake Factory, she's saying.
The Cheesecake Factory one tastes really good.
But that's also marbled bread. If I looked up marbled bread, it brought up rye.
Marbled bread is supposed to have white and rye mixed together.
Oh, so it's funny how you guys are on the same thing. Is it like the Outback bread? Because that's also brown bread, and that's also very good bread.
That's what I was just thinking. Is it like Outback bread? I love rye bread.
Do you guys want to know something? I've never been to Outback.
I've only been to Cheesecake Factory once.
How is that possible that you've never been to an Outback?
I was a Longhorns girl.
Oh.
Same.
Outback's one of the, like, prime Canton, Georgia restaurants. We have an Outback. We got a Red Lobster. I'm
so mad at you right now. It shouldn't be steak.
We got an Outback. We got a Red Lobster. We got Panda Express now. Like,
The vegetarian just looked at you and said, you've never been to an Outback?
I like
Outback. Oh, that's so true. What the fuck? Why are you asking me? You couldn't get bread, the same thing from both places.
Good bread, blooming onion. I don't know if I like Longhorns. I've only been a handful of times. We don't have a Longhorns in Canton. It's in...
I'll be honest with you, they went downhill. It's downhill now.
It really did. Way too, like... flaky, it falls apart whenever you try to cut it.
Remember when we used to think like Red Lobster was a super fancy night out?
Yes. Annie said it still is.
I'm not saying it isn't, but
it costs more than $50. It's fancy.
It's not as fancy as I thought it was growing up, though.
That's true.
It's so true. Olive Garden, Applebee's way down there.
Oh, Olive Garden is junk.
Red Lobster, Longhorns, and Outback, those 4 deceived us.
They lied.
I'm leaving.
How
dare you?
Kizzy turned her camera off. I thought she was losing this.
How dare you talk about Olive Garden like that?
I hate Olive Garden now. I've tried.
We tried as well. Carrabba's, same thing. Carrabba's.
I love
Kinsey, Olive are you Garden. Feeling a little rejected right now?
I love Olive Garden.
Oh, I see where we're going with this. Okay, well, I don't know where you're fully going with this, but I know partially why, at least, American Idiot.
Are you feeling a little rejected?
I'm feeling offended.
Always feels rejected.
But sure, let's say rejected.
Always feels rejected.
Okay, today our story is the psychology of rejection. And I'm starting off with some quotes from Reddit about the worst rejection stories that they've had. So, okay.
What good research. What are your resources? Reddit?
Just Reddit.
Yeah. No. BuzzFeed.
Wow. I'm impressed.
BuzzFeed, PsychologyToday.com, APA.org, NCBI.gov.
Can Psychology Today just sponsor us at this point?
GoodTherapy.org. And
I doubt it.
I wish. That would be really great. Okay, are you guys... Okay. Are you guys ready for some... From BuzzFeed, they did their research, and I just took it. They went to Reddit talking about some of the worst rejections that people have had. And these are mostly quotes from people. So here's number one. She told me she would rather eat her own tampon. Is the first rejection.
Then what? What is the compared to what?
No. This is just like guys asking girls out. Oh. Yeah, asking girls out. And she told me she would rather eat her own tampon.
I'm still caught on that one. It's going to take me a minute. I don't know why you started there.
Number two was, I stuttered multiple times while asking her out, and the only thing she said was fail, and then she walked away.
Why are people so mean?
There's another one that says, like, pretend, right? I picked only the best ones.
Annie and I are just upset, and Kayla's laughing.
So what are some reactions that you feel whenever reading these rejections? What are some emotions that you think would be tied to that?
My tummy hurts. And Annie's looking at the emotions wheel.
Yeah, she is.
I
feel humiliated. Uh-huh. I feel bitter. I feel provoked. Wait, am I looking at this for somebody else or for myself?
Right.
Either one.
Well, I feel like it's very different. If it's somebody else, I feel very angry and I want to punch the person. I'm very hostile when it comes to protecting. For myself, I feel very hurt and insignificant, inadequate, helpless, scared. You just do it's the blue.
I feel the opposite. For me, I'm going to slap a hoe. For you, I'm going to sit and cry with you. I'm going to be sad boy. And then maybe slap a hoe.
Never cry with me.
Both will leave.
So you would be aggressive towards somebody if they were directing it at you, but you would cry with somebody else?
No, that bully tracks for her because when she's hurt, she's angry.
I mean, that's true.
And she has no boundaries, so when you said, she said.
Enmeshed.
In four words, Kinsey.
When you said, she's sad.
Kayla.
How would I feel? I think I would feel sad and angry. I think my first response is angry to rejection. And then after I think about it for a while, I get real sad and butthurt.
Right. Embarrassment is a big one for an after feeling, I feel like. Because like at first, it's just kind of like, that's uncomfortable, it's hurtful. But I'm going to like, in the right conditions, I'm going to just kind of play it off and be like, okay, that's fine. And honestly, it is. Like, it's fine. You're allowed to say no. Afterwards, though, I feel embarrassed. Like, because you put yourself out there, so like you were vulnerable, and then you got hurt. But like, if somebody's that cruel, then it's like a fuck you moment, right? Like, you can reject me and it be hurtful. But if you're going to be that mean about it without any reason to, that's taking it to a whole nother level. And that's just aggressive. And then there's a fight.
Right. So obviously rejection elicits a lot of human emotion, and a response to either real, anticipated, remembered, or imagined rejection by other people. Evolutionarily, humans are hardwired to feel accepted by social groups. And because it was a means of survival to be accepted into groups, we have evolved to have a reaction to being rejected by these groups. So there has been a lot of studies that have gone into rejection, including like hard science, like fMRIs and stuff like that. So I'm going to go into some of the bullet points that I have found about rejection. Did you know that rejection is felt in the same part of the brain as physical pain. There was an fMRI study that showed that the same areas of the brain become activated when we experience rejection as when we experience physical pain.
I did not know that, but that does make sense because it's kind of like with fear. Our brains can't interpret the difference between physical or emotional threat. So I think that tracks for the same way it would experience pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's...
What part of the brain is it?
So neuroscientific investigations suggest that a lot of the activity in the brain happens in the dorsal anterior cingulate cortex and anterior insula.
Yeah.
Annie? Among
there, right. Of course, yeah, that's where I was thinking.
You know where that is. So among other functions, these neural regions are also associated with physical pain, which explains why people report that they are hurt when they feel devalued or rejected.
It almost, the way that the picture shows, I can't quite tell. It looks like it's taking a part of the outer cortex off. So it's like kind of towards that center part of the brain, like almost the animal brain. And that, mm-hmm. that would make sense because like the way that nerves receive impulses from the body, like that's where it's going to the brain stem. So I think that's where it's pointing to, but just like it's the midbrain. So right between the outer cortex and the hindbrain, which is the brain stem. That's what it looks like. I could be wrong. Nobody quote me on that.
So that would be the reptilian part?
Yeah, so it's still a part of the reptilian brain, but it is the more evolved version. So your hindbrain is the reptilian brain, and then you have the midbrain. And the reason I say that makes sense is because that is where you have like a lot of dopamine produced.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also responsible for a lot of your automatic movement, your involuntary movement.
Yeah.
And that's where like a lot of the nerve impulses go to.
Right. So I feel like your reactions to emotional pain are kind of more like a reflex. Or they
it's
can
definitely,
be.
I would say it's reflex, but it's also learned behavior because you're still processing that.
No, your reaction to it.
Oh, your reaction. Yeah. Reaction would be more reflexive.
Right. So, people who score high on measures of rejection sensitivity show a greater activity in these areas in response to rejecting stimuli than people with low rejection sensitivity.
One more time.
Not only does rejection lead to increased activity in these areas, but people who score high on measures of rejection sensitivity show greater activity in these areas in response to rejecting stimuli than people low in rejection sensitivity.
So are they saying that that's proving that theory, or are they saying that that is something that they're like, it's organic to that person? Like it's a genetic thing. Is that clear?
No, this is part of the study that, is comparing emotional
so they're almost backing
with
up.
Physical
okay, so,
pain.
Gotcha. So they're backing up saying that, you know, so it tracks that this part is going to show that this reaction is actually occurring within the brain. Like this is an organic thing too.
Right.
I don't understand.
But they're saying that people, they are trying to prove that is a physical pain. That it comes from the same areas of the brain that of physical pain.
Mm.
That makes sense.
Right. So, because you were asking me where that part of the brain was, but
yeah.
So because it neurologically does come from the same part of the brain, Tylenol, there was a study that proved or tried to prove that Tylenol reduces emotional pain, the emotional pain that rejection elicits.
What the fuck?
What an interesting, I didn't even consider that, that if you're saying that it comes from the same part of the brain, that you can treat it as if it is a physical entity.
Yeah, so researchers gave some participants in their study acetaminophen, which Tylenol, before asking them to recall painful rejection experience. And the people who received Tylenol reported significantly less emotional pain than subjects who took a sugar pill.
Man.
Yeah.
But you know, that's not so much of a leap. It seems like a leap at first because it is two different things. But I mean, we do treat like seizures the same way we sometimes treat anxiety disorders. Like they're the same medication to do two different things. So it's not completely off. It's just, I haven't heard that before. So that's fascinating.
Right. Of course there is a limit to, you know, how much Tylenol can ease, just like with physical pain.
That's actually one of the drugs that can be very, very fatal to people who take it to hurt themselves and don't realize that it can have permanent lifelong effects to their liver because it just like, it'll shut down the liver. And like a lot, I know I've heard like the horror stories of teens taking it, like they don't actually mean to overdose. They just want to like, they're hurting, they're in pain and they'll take it and they don't recognize that now their liver is shot. But anyways, that's a whole nother side.
So be careful out there taking Tylenol.
Yeah.
Psychologists assume, this is going to go back to the evolutionary past of emotional pain, of rejection. Psychologists assume that the reason for the strong link between rejection and physical pain is that rejection served as a vital function of our evolutionary past. So in Kenzie's favorite, hunter-gatherer days, being ostracized.
I would have been rejected then too, is what you're saying. Fuck.
Yeah, I know. So being
ostracized. Kenzie would have brought the shittiest berries back and then been like, I'm so surprised that nobody wants these. Why don't you want my berries?
Literally just like twigs with like the most shriveled up bird picked berries that you can find. And she's like, this is all that's out there.
Fuck y'all. You know, I should have been a hunter.
Okay, so
be quiet.
Being ostracized from like tribes was basically a death sentence because we are unlikely to survive for very long by ourselves. So evolutionary psychologists assume the brain developed an early warning system to alert us when we are at risk for ostracism. Because it was so important to get our attention, those who experienced rejection as more painful gained an advantage, and they were more likely to correct their behavior and consequently more likely to remain in the tribe.
Please address the dumb face she has. She has a thought and I need to hear it.
So what you're saying, Kenzie, is go. The fact that I'm sensitive is an advantage to me surviving on Survivor when I do henceforth apply.
I think it's a bell curve. I think you're on the other end.
No, of that. You said
a good response.
You said people that are more sensitive are more.
I think there's like a sweet spot.
I really feel like this is a great example of you taking a few selective words and thinking you hear something else.
Run with it,
soul survivor.
Okay, so
all I'm saying is my evolution has done much better than your evolution. That's what I'm hearing.
That's not what she said.
No, that's exactly what I said, Kins. Anyway, so this probably also explains why we can relive and re-experience social pain more vividly than we can physical pain.
Oh,
so
yeah. That's a good point, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like most people minimize their pain when they think about it.
Yeah. So whenever you try to think of physical pain, your brain pathways will respond less
but why?
Painful.
But here's another interesting is that what you call them?
Interesting what?
Sure. Aaron?
Another interesting question would be the effect of gender on this. Because do you think about how we talk about men being more prone to exaggerate pain and minimize like emotional pain? I would wonder at that aspect. There's no thought to that. I just wonder.
Also the idea
that like in general in healthcare settings, women's pain is minimized by others. So right. I'd be curious mm-hmm. what that looks like here. Cause like women's physical pain has been shown to be correlated with like women are saying they're in pain. Doctors aren't taking it seriously. And that's leading to more female deaths in hospital settings, especially with childbirth. So like, I'd be interested what all that means.
Right. So it didn't, this, what I looked up didn't really go into like the differences between the sexes, but so whenever you're trying to think of physical pain or if you're trying to relive physical pain, your neural pathways don't remember it as well as whenever you are reliving a painful rejection. The article says that many times you will be flooded with a lot of the same feelings that you had at the time, and your brain will respond almost in the same way that it did previously.
I don't think that would be the same throughout history, though.
Same.
Well,
go ahead, Ken.
My thought's separate. Finish your thought.
The reason I say that is I feel like our perception is going to have a big play here in that we are living in the concrete jungle now. Like I use this example a lot with clients to talk about the ways that our brain experiences fear. And so that when we experience fear now, our brain perceives it the same way that it did a physical threat before in an evolutionary sense. But now we worry more about the social because that's where we actually have a threat, right? So that our perception of the social is much more prioritized now than it was then.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Or it just gets triggered more often.
It gets triggered more often, but the everyday person today, when I say everyday, I do mean like people who are privileged enough to live in a place like us that we don't have to worry about like physical threats a lot. Yes, we do have to worry about the physical threat of people, but that is still minimal compared to what we would have in hunter-gatherer days where literally our environment is caked with possible threats.
Right.
So that you would not worry as much about being rejected that you would in the sense of like, if it could happen, you were like really kicked out, but that's probably still going to be minimal compared to the rejection we face today.
But see, there is, okay.
Go ahead.
There is information about that a little bit. Because a lot of times our threats today are not, like our social threats do not mean that we will not survive the night.
Right.
Whereas back then you get rejected by your tribe or you get rejected by your group of people that you're with. It is a death sentence. And so now because we do have the technology to survive on our own and we have the ability to survive on our own, I don't know. I would just have to, we would have to look more into that.
Right. No, I have, so two thoughts here. First and foremost, I think this is really interesting comparison because like listeners, like all week for the past week, Kayla keeps saying, we're not going to do the walking challenge again. We're not going to do the walking challenge again. And I'm like, we'll see how we feel in 6 months when they do it again, because I really don't feel like that's necessarily true. because I feel like we are all going to think about it much more fondly than we currently are thinking about it. I feel like in the present, when our feet and our hips hurt, we're like, fuck that shit. Well, me and Kayla are Annie's. So, but Annie's a machine and she loves this kind of stuff, but
I like physical.
Kayla keeps saying like, we're not going to do it again. And I'm like, I don't think that's true, but we'll see. Cause we're going to forget that it's fucking sucked. Second off, I know Annie's going to hate this comment, but I really do. I can't help but think of the Croods,
I was going to say the Croods. I was going to think of the Croods.
Well, I think it's like a really good comparison, right? Because like that movie in itself shows that even on supposedly when we were cavemen, right? Like we were craving physical connections. We were craving to have someone love us for who we are and want to be with us and join our tribe and be part of that.
And you're right. I do hate this comparison.
Yes. And I think that's a good comparison though. Cause like, it is like, she's like basically fighting for survival. Like they leave the cave and they have to watch out for the giant fucking tiger thing. So they don't die.
Rejection is very different. Right. Yeah, so that yes, rejection. Disney, Pixar, animated.
I don't know.
Probably
DreamWorks. I think
DreamWorks, whoever made the Croods, yes, it is a lovely take on it, but I doubt that they were telling each other that they just need human connection. It was much more about survival.
So, our brain prioritizes rejection experiences because we are social animals who do live in tribes, quote. This leads to an aspect of rejection that we often overlook, which is our need to belong. See? We all have a fundamental need to belong to a group. And when we get rejected, these become destabilized and the disconnection we feel adds to our emotional pain. So reconnecting with those who love us or reaching out to members of groups where we feel strong connections with have been found to soothe emotional pain after rejection, which is a lot of times whenever you're in therapy, your therapist will ask you, who is your support system? Not just because of rejection, but because of that human connection. It is very important for us as humans to feel connected with people outside of ourselves.
Even Annie.
Thoughts? Even Annie.
I don't disagree with that, but I disagree with what that means.
Which part?
The human connection part. So the human connection that we focus on today is more of the feeling. At that point, it would have been less about trying to form human connection and more about staying alive. If we're really talking like hunter-gatherer, like they're not there.
That's true. Because
I'm not disagreeing with that.
In my next child-related comparison,
Shrek.
In The Sims.
Oh, no. I don't know anything about The Sims.
When they're on the island, they have an island game. And the more villagers you have, the better your tribe is doing, right? You need more. It's group of numbers, right? You need lots of people to do lots of jobs to protect the tribe.
Anyway.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Thank you for that. So obviously, as humans, we do have a lot of emotions whenever we do feel rejected, and a lot of those emotions elicit different behaviors.
I don't like the way you said that. Behaviors.
Behaviors.
You sound like you're teaching.
I am teaching.
And angry. Are you angry?
I can be if you want me to.
We're letting you speak today.
Of course you are. I have not been cut off 16 times throughout this whole thing. Jesus. Going back to the whole hurt feelings thing, this can mean a lot of different things. Hurt feelings is a broad spectrum of what people actually start, like what they actually are feeling, which is why we really love the emotion wheel in this group. So jealousy is one of them. Jealousy involves a motivation to eliminate the influence of the third party. So if we feel rejected in a relationship, or if we feel rejected, or even just like a child feels rejected by their parents because of a sibling or whatever, the feeling of trying to eliminate the influence of the third party, they may try, people who feel jealousy when rejected, they may try to increase their desirability to target or diminish the third party's influence.
So what we're looking at here then is, you're basically saying, okay, there is an evolutionary perspective, or this is the evolutionary perspective on the emotions that are elicited. Like, what function do they serve? And that jealousy serves the function of increasing your buy-in to what you want. That you're going to show it more because now I'm jealous.
I think it's more of a competition. So you're then, trying to eliminate the third party.
So you're okay. So then the jealousy that I feel makes me want to kick that person out. Like it yes. encourages me to get that person out of the way. Like anger, yes. if I was angry, I would say hurt them, intimidate them out. But jealousy says just get them out.
Yes. So jealous people sometimes behave in ways that are anything but endearing to the target. And that includes outbursts of anger, threats, and physical abuse.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. Kinsey, basically what you're trying to do then is push Kayla out of her house?
I want Kayla's house. I thought I made that clear.
Right.
Okay.
I've been saying that since day one. Kayla, fucking get out.
Okay.
You can leave the cats, but take DJ.
You want me to leave Connor?
Yeah.
Okay. There are people who feel loneliness and homesickness when they feel that their relationship is not available to them. So,
like any relationship?
Sounds like it triggers that thought.
Homesickness in this situation is characterized by primarily an acute feeling of loneliness and sadness when one is not only separated from loved ones, but is also away from familiar circumstances.
I feel that way sometimes when I go into town without Kevin. No joke. I feel homesick.
You guys are so enmeshed. It's disgusting.
It's just the thought of I don't feel at home right now. It's not so much yeah. that I need him. It's I don't feel at home. So I understand like that thought of getting rejected can lead you to not feeling a home.
Stop trying to validate it.
You're not.
Obviously, not all loneliness arises from explicit rejection, but rejection is a lot of times.
I definitely see it. I sometimes kind of feel like I have like a almost like the cup thing where you're like you can't pour from an empty cup. I kind of have like a connection cup. And I feel like after several months where I haven't been at home with my family, mm-hmm. I need to go home. I was thinking about that yesterday, actually. I was like, it's time. I need to go home.
Yeah.
Like, just I'm being stupid. Around people that... Did you say that's stupid?
Stupid.
Just being around people that, you know, accept and love you for your normal self. See?
Right. And like, when you're rejected, you don't feel accepted and loved.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes just being around my family can help with that, especially being like away from home in a different state and stuff.
Another emotion that is elicited from rejection is guilt and shame, are often reactions to moral or ethical violations So, emotions may have evolved to manage situations in which one has violated group standards in ways that might decrease one's relational value and damage one's relationship, and result in social rejection or group expulsion. So people feel guilty about engaging in a bad behavior where they feel ashamed about being a bad person. There are people who think or who have traced shame and guilt to violations of one's personal standards.
That one I'm having a harder time connecting to.
Okay. Let me try to clear it up.
I think it's like just an interpretation, right? Like it depends on what you're interpreting as their reason for rejection. So like if I feel like I've done something wrong and that's why I'm being rejected, I can see that being shame and guilt.
Okay, so guilt and shame appear to be inherently social emotions rather than merely reactions to violations of personal standards. The fact that people can make us feel guilty or ashamed, even if we believe we did nothing wrong, demonstrates the centrality of interpersonal concerns in guilt and shame. Both of these arise in situations that have potential implications for people's relational value to other people, but they arise in response to slightly different concerns. So
how are people perceiving me?
Pretty much. So a lot of times whenever people feel guilt or shame, they will apologize, ask for forgiveness, engage in remedial behaviors, and restitution, and take other steps to improve their social image to repair their interpersonal relationships.
Does it not? Tell me I'm wrong.
No, it
sounds like something Kinsey would do.
Which part?
The apologize because somebody hurt you.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so I've only got two more sections, and then I'll be done. We can close it out.
Okay.
Other feelings that are elicited by rejection are social anxiety and embarrassment, feelings of nervousness in social encounters.
I will say, I feel like there's probably a correlation between social anxiety and feeling of rejection, at least as someone who is both socially anxious and easily rejected. So I would be interested to see studies on that.
Okay. So people realize that the degree to which others value and accept them as relational partners, group members, and social interactants depends heavily on how they are perceived. For example, being viewed as attractive, competent, likable, and ethical generally results in a higher relational value than being viewed as unattractive, incompetent, unlikable, or immoral. So when people believe that they might not make the impressions that they want in a particular situation, they experience social anxiety. So social anxiety may have evolved as an early warning system that deterred people from behaving in ways that might compromise their social image.
I'm so fucking involved, you guys.
That's sure. Not what we're saying.
I'm so involved.
But I think that it goes back to the function of anxiety, right? So the function of anxiety is to think of possible threats or possible, you know, perception threats. So, I mean, it tracks for what it would try to do for rejection, because if we're saying we are socially anxious, then we're saying that we're thinking that something could happen to us socially, like something bad, whether it's embarrassment, rejection, whatever. So that would make sense. That would make sense to me more than the guilt and the shame.
So human displays of embarrassment often include blushing, averted gaze, and mirthless smiling. Are analogous?
Oh no, analogous. I like that way. And all
analogous to the appeasement displays of other primates when they have displeased a higher ranking member of the group. So evolutionarily,
anybody else is wondering what mirthless means? It means lacking real amusement.
I was.
It's a fake smile.
I don't want to interrupt again. Thank you.
So evolutionarily, it makes sense for embarrassment or social anxiety to be present because of our instincts. And the last section is sadness and anger. So,
I feel like you saved the most obvious for last. I'm saying that one seems to me like the most basic, like most people are going to either be sad or angry. And that those are very big categories, very, like, not basic emotions, but, like, their primary emotions.
Yes. So, neither sadness nor anger is caused by perceived low relational value. And instead, sadness arises from perceived loss, and anger arises when people perceive that another person, which it's not always another person, but usually a person, has unjustifiably behaved in an undesired fashion that threatens their desires or well-beings.
So I am sad because I have lost. I am angry because I feel threatened.
Correct. Yeah. So, although sadness is obviously an aversive experience, the emotion may be functional in leading people to protect both their relationships and the people with whom they have those relationships. But lost relationships can cause pain and sadness, and people are motivated to behave in ways to protect their relational value in the eyes of those in the relationship with them. Obviously, sadness, this type of sadness, prolonged rejection can contribute to depressive episodes due to ostracism, romantic breakups, and other chronic relational devaluation can cause depression in both adults and adolescents. And people also sometimes become very angry when they feel rejected, but anger is not caused by low relational value. Rather, anger arises during rejection episodes when people interpret the rejection as unjustified harm. So they become angry and they react aggressively. Anger may be designed to prevent, terminate, or punish specific behaviors that are perceived as an immediate threat. So, lashing out, domestic violence commonly erupts when people feel devalued by family members. School shootings are usually perpetrated by students who feel ostracized by their peers. And whether people aggress when rejected depends on a lot of factors, including the value of the relationship, or if they believe that the rejection was unfair and cannot be repaired.
I'm processing. I really was thinking about this last part in relation to a lot, and this is kind of taking a dark turn, a lot of what happens with women who are hurt by men physically, that they rejected, or that the men felt that they were rejected by, so that the men then use violence to, I guess, reciprocate that hurt. And so I think it's that, you know, if you look at it, and once again, we often try to understand versus condemn. I condemn the behavior, but I also seek to understand why it occurs. And so in that context, I think this would make sense, because we're saying, when they feel rejected, they feel as if they are being attacked. And so then they attack back, because we have anger. And I always use the evolutionary perspective of emotion. So anger does protect us. So that if I feel hurt, that's why anger comes up, right? I'm sure we've all addressed that in some way with clients or talked about it. And so that's where my mind was going to for a moment.
Yeah. I was looking into rejection a long time ago, like several months ago. I was going to do an episode on rejection, but I couldn't really find a good story on it. So I just started pulling stuff up from like Reddit, and a lot of them are brutal, right? And they elicit emotions in other people. Like, I don't know. These are literally words on a screen, and I'm like so uncomfortable.
Right. I'm uncomfortable without the context, because I feel like for a lot of women, we're taught that you're supposed to be nice to boys who approach you. I don't think you always have to be nice, but I don't think you have to go for the jugular. But I do feel like within the right context, some of these could be absolutely justified. But some of these, I couldn't even imagine within the right context, saying that to somebody because it's just so hurtful.
I'll say it to a friend as a joke.
Right. But that's a completely different context.
Yeah. No, I agree. And obviously you're not going to get the full story on either Reddit or BuzzFeed.
Right.
Because what? People are going to give you their perspective. And a lot of times the perspective does not have both sides.
And don't forget, perception. Your perception is your reality.
Right. And
Okay. I heard that somewhere recently.
Oh, yes. Love is blind.
We'll go there.
So, but like you think of rejection in the context of a lot of true crime. A lot of true crime happens because of some form of rejection, right? And there's also like, I was starting to think of this as like gangs too. It's saying whenever you feel rejected by a certain group of people, whether that be your family or peers at school, you will seek acceptance from somebody, even if that group can be dangerous.
Yeah, I think this is why when parents talk to me about their teenagers who are changing their personalities and their like how they dress and all to fit the crowd, I have to remind them how difficult school is for an individual, and that it might not be the time for them to form their individual identity, that this is when they're trying to survive within a group. So that I don't think it's very surprising that they're within a group and forming their identity around this group.
I definitely think rejection is harder earlier on in your life.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know that it's harder. I think that it's harder because you're learning how to deal with it.
Right.
Like a lot of times if you have healthy homes or healthy at least one healthy relationship growing up, I think feeling ostracized from groups outside of or like at school or amongst peers or anything like that, that's going to hit a lot harder.
Yeah.
Especially if it's people you don't even really know that well.
Right.
No, I think it's very, very much going to go back to what we talked about with attachment theory. And I think those two things are going to correlate heavily. How you see yourself is very correlated with how you perceive rejection. There's a reason that like social anxiety is factored in with like self-esteem, because if you struggle with your self-esteem, you're going to feel like rejection speaks volumes about yourself. I think that's going to speak low. It's going to be more connected with that sense of relational value. If you are very confident in yourself, on the other side of this, if you're very confident in yourself in a healthy way and recognize that rejection doesn't mean you're not good enough, you're going to experience rejection maybe more as a loss than as a attack or as a sense of saying something about yourself. So it's not going to mean anything about your relational value. It's simply going to say, this does not work for us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where I went with that, but that's my thought.
I feel like I understand your viewpoints, but I do think for kids, like, rejection is very life or death. They don't really understand the wide variety of emotions. Adults feel their emotions are often a lot larger and harder to deal with because they're just learning how to express themselves and feel and be. So I think school-related rejection has got to be one of the harder types, as well as dating, right? Like dating in school. But I also have seen a lot of research that shows that like friend breakups are harder than romantic breakups. So friend rejection.
I've seen that as well.
Friend rejection. You and know, I have a really hard time with it.
Maybe it comes down to that as we get older, we've found our community. And so it's not as much of a threat
right.
if we are rejected. So that while tribe, you're growing, yeah. you found your tribe so that it doesn't mean that you're isolated. While you're in school, it might mean that you're very isolated. So maybe it just means something different. Not that it's bigger or smaller. It just means something different.
Right. Mm-hmm. I find that friend rejection takes a long time to get over, even at this age.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't know that we I know. Feel that way.
Amy,
we know
you have three friends,
and I'll lose every fucking one of them.
And when one of us doesn't respond, I know you notice.
So anyway, that's my story on rejection.
I liked it.
Good story. I liked it. Very good job. Look, and look at how much Kinsey and I let you speak today.
Right.
I was fighting for my life.
Don't look be at how much we let you speak. Right. That's so dramatic.
Don't be dramatic.
That's exaggerated.
Fighting for my Tori. Life. Anyway, follow us on Instagram.
And until then, stay mental.
Stay morbid.
See you Tuesday. Fuck it.